Okay, Boker Tov, or Tzaharim Tov. Okay, as you will soon hear, Rabbi Grumman is a teacher's teacher. He is here in North America working. He works at Pardes Institute in Israel, and he's here overseeing the teachers they train to go to the community schools in Chutz Laretz. Rabbi Grumman taught for many years in North America at Frisch, other schools, made Aliyah. He teaches at Eretz Hatzvi, works at the Luxin Center at Bar Ilan, is the author of a number of books, and really is a master teacher, and it's a pleasure to have him for the whole weekend. Bakasha, Rabbi Grumman.
Thank you. I appreciate the brevity of the introduction. As somebody who sometimes has to introduce other people, I always start by saying that the length of the introduction is proportionally inverse to the quality of the speaker. When we think about a Navi, the thing that first comes to mind is somebody who hears the direct communication from God and can transmit that direct communication to people. If you want absolute clarity, you go to the Navi, and we live in a time of absolute unclarity because we have no Navim. I remember when I was younger, one of my friends said to me, I wish that Eliyahu, and we're in the dating stages, and my friend said, I wish that Eliyahu and Avi would be around, and he would just say, you, and make life much easier. It turns out, though, when you look at Nevi'im, Nevi'im play a very different role in Tanakh, and we're going to start at the end and move our way back towards the beginning. If you go towards the end of Tanakh, like the very, very, very end of Tanakh, one of the last Nevi'im is Zechariah. And if you look at the top of your page, on side one, there are two columns there. Zechariah has a nevuah. Vayareini Hashem arba'a chorashim. Hashem showed me four horses. Va'omar ma'ela. And Zechariah says, what is that? Wait a minute. He's the Navi. Why is he asking the question? He's supposed to know the answer. He sees an image. So why doesn't he understand what it means? It's not the only time. not the only time Zechariah asks a question. And over and over again, in the two prakim later, in Perek Dalet, which I didn't put here on the sheets, just because I didn't want to overload you with lots and lots of texts. But Zechariah has another vision. And in that vision, we read as follows. This is Zechariah Perek Dalet. Says, I was woken up and I saw, this is the Haftorah for Shabbat Chanukah. Menorat Zahav Kula. I saw a menorah completely made of gold. And now he describes the details of that. And olives or olive branches, one on the right and one on the left. Va'an va'umar el hamalach hadover bi lemor. So I responded to the malach who was talking to me, who showed me this vision. I said, Ma ele aduni, what is that? We have a Navi who has nevuah. He's being shown images. And he doesn't understand it. And he's asking for interpretations. So we think of the Navi who gets visions from God, and those visions come with absolute clarity. And it turns out that's not the case at all. If we move backwards a little bit from Zechariah, who's after the Chorban, to Yirmiyahu, who's just before the Chorban, we have the first source on your page. And the first parak in Sefer Yirmiyahu is amazing. First we're introduced to him, and then, Vayihi Devar Hashem Elai Lemor, Ma'ata Ro'eh Yirmiyahu. Hashem says, what do you see? Va'omar makel shaked ani ro'eh. He says, I see a branch of a shkedia, branch of an almond tree. Va'yomar Hashem elai, hey tav teler ot. That was good. Your vision's good. That's like a training session for a Navi. It happens again afterwards at the next nevuah. And it happens again afterwards, much, much later on in Sefer Yirmiyahu and Perek Chaf Beit or Chaf Gimel. He once again has a nevuah and he says, what do you see? And he sees it. He says, good, good, good. And let me explain to you what it means. Look at this. We have Nevi'im who get their visions, and it's not clear to them what they're seeing or why they're seeing it, and they need somebody to come and interpret the Nevu'ah for them. That's really bizarre. That's not what I expected as Nevu'ah. If we begin to investigate this, it turns out that Nevi'im get messages from Hashem, but those messages aren't always as clear as we would have imagined, and that a big part of the job of the Navi is not simply to transmit what God told them to the people, but a big job of the Navi is actually to interpret what they see and to interpret even sometimes the words into something meaningful. I'd like to start with an example, and we're going to shift now from the end of Tanakh to the beginning of Tanakh. We're going to shift to back to Sefer Bereishit. And the first person really to be described as an Avi is Avraham. He communicates with Hashem. And the first thing Hashem tells Avraham, we all know this, Lech lecha mi'artzecha mi'moladetecha mi'beit avicha el ha'aretz asher areka. I want you to leave the land. Okay, and go where? Where's Avraham supposed to go? Wherever Hashem is going to show him. Now, here's the really interesting thing. Okay, we have some of the psukim in front of us. It's on your sheets. It's actually labeled as number one. It's after the first two at the top of the page. So we have the Lech Lecha. And then Abraham goes. Okay, pasuk hey. Vayikach Avram et Sarai ishto ve'et Lot ben Achi ve'et Koruchusham asher achashu ve'et hanefesh asher asu v'charan. Avram gathers together his family and all his belongings and his extended clan. Vayitzu lalechet aretz haKena'an. They left to go towards Kena'an. Vayavo'u aretz haKena'an. They actually arrived there. Now Hashem never told him to go to Kena'an. What did Hashem tell him to do? Go to the place he was going to show him, but he never told him to go to Canaan. And it turns out Avram's choice of going to Canaan is because he's following in his father's footsteps. About seven psukim earlier, at the end of Parashat Noach, it's not all that well known, but at the end of Perek Yud Aleph, Hashem never told Terach, but we have exactly the same pasuk. But about Terach, not about Avram. Vayikach Terach, not Vayikach Avram, but Vayikach Terach. Et Avram beno, ve'et Lot ben Haran ben beno, ve'et Sarai kalato esh et Avram beno, the extended family, the clan, everybody who's with them. Vayetzu, same thing we have over here, Vayetzu, right? Vayetzu itam me'ur kastim lalechet arza kana'an. Terach started to go to Canaan. So Avram's finishing his father's trip. His father wanted to go to Canaan, got stuck halfway. He got stuck in Haran. So Avram goes to finish his father's trip. Right? He goes towards Eretz Canaan. Right? But here's where it gets really strange. Because what happens? He goes towards Canaan. He arrives at Canaan, and now we have a little bit of detail. Vayavor Avram ba'aretz ad mekom Shechem. Right? He comes in, and he probably came into Canaan through the Adam crossing on the Jordan River. It's been there for thousands of years. It's a natural place to ford the Jordan River. You come down from Nachal Yabok, which is in Jordan. Yaakov, two generations later, does exactly the same thing. Comes down Nachal Yabok, you come down to the Jordan River. The mountains are high. You come down to the Jordan River. You cross over at the Adam crossing. You go up Nachal Tirza, right? Because the roots follow either the mountains or the wadis that cut between the mountains. And when you come up from Nachal Tirza, you end up at Shechem. Right? And then from Shechem, you can continue in a number of different directions. You can go onto the mountain route on the other side. You can continue cutting across the other way. Anyway, Avram comes to Shechem. Adelon Morev, Aknani, Az Ba'aretz, Vayera Hashem al Avram. Hashem appears to Avram. And what does he say? L'zaracha teinat ha'aretz hazot. I'm going to give your kids this land. That's nice. Does that mean that that's the place that Avram is supposed to go? Why? His kids are going to be there. But what about him? He said to go El Ha'aretz Asher Areka. He hasn't shown him the land. He told him, your kids are going to get this place. Okay, that's great. He doesn't have any kids yet, so he knows it's not going to happen in the immediate future. He builds him his Be'ach. La'ashem ha'nirei lava. God appeared to him, but God didn't show him. A big difference between an appearance and showing. So what does Avram do? The only logical thing. He continues. The next pasuk, pasukhet. Vaya'atek misham hahara. He removed himself from the root of Nachal Tirza. That's vaya'atek. Right? And he moves himself onto the mountain root. Right? And now he goes, right, that's hahara. I mean, it doesn't mean he goes up to the mountain. It means he goes to the mountain route. That mountain route, by the way, goes from Shechem through Beit El, close to Yerushalayim, Beit Lechem, Hebron, Be'er Sheva. It's the central mountain route. Today you can drive it. It's called Route 60. Just take an armed guard with you. Vayatake mishamahara mikedem leBeit El. So he goes from there down to a place that's just east of Beit El, Vayet Ahalo Beit El Miyam Va'ay Mikedem. So he goes and he establishes his tent. Right? He sets up his tent in this place. He's got Beit El on the east. He's got the Ay on the west. We know exactly where this is. Today it's called Har Baal Chatzor. You can't go there because on the top of the mountain is one of the most sensitive army posts in the entire country. It's because it's the highest, literally the highest mountain in central Israel. I think the only thing that's higher than it is Har Meron, up all the way up in the north. And Har Meron also, you can't go to the very top because they have a sensitive listening post. That so Har Baal Chatzor, which is this place between Beit El and the Ai, is the highest place in all of central Eretz Yisrael. The army today can listen into Jordan, they can listen to Syria, they can listen to Saudi Arabia from that place, yeah. What's the country?
Right, that's what I'm saying. God tells him you're going to be in this land. So you're saying that's where his kids. So is he going to a different land now? That's your point, right? He's going to a different land?
It's going to get more intense. Don't worry. Okay? So he goes to this place, and the fact that it's the highest place, I mean, you stand up there, you can see Hebron. You're north of Yerushalayim, you can see Hebron. If you're looking south, if you're looking north, you can see Har Meron, you can see Tzfat. If you're looking to the west, you can see the sea. If you're looking to the east, you can see the mountains of Jordan. You have a commanding view of the entire central land of Israel. So he goes and he reaches that place, and he gets up there and he says, "Whoa! Vayiven misham mizbeach laHashem." He builds a mizbeach. Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He calls out to God. Why is he calling out to Hashem? He's looking for directions. Is this the place? Right? And Hashem doesn't answer him. So what does he do? Vayisa Avram haloch v'nasel ha'negba. He continues going southward. He started all the way in north. He started in Haran. He's traveling. His general direction is southward. He continues traveling southward. He goes so far southward that he ends up, his next stop is Mitzrayim. Right? He just kept going in that direction. And as he got close to Mitzrayim, he says, uh-oh, I something's wrong. Now, here's the really interesting thing. Avram is the first person who's identified as a Navi. Later on, in the story of Avimelech, Hashem says, Hashevet ishet ha'ish ki navihu. He's a Navi, right? So return the man's wife. The Navi was told by Hashem, Lech lecha la'aretz asher areka. And he's looking for God to tell him. And Hashem hasn't told him. So he just keeps going. And then when he gets to Mitzrayim, he realizes that he missed it. That's amazing. In fact, what happens after he leaves Mitzrayim? Something really interesting. It's a very strange pasuk. On the way out of Mitzrayim, it says that Vayal Avrami Mitzrayim, right? Hu v'yishto v'chol asher lo v'lot imo hanegba, Vayelech l'masa'av. He went according to his travels. What does that mean? That's not on your sheets. What is Vayelech? He went according to his travels. Like, yes, he's retracing his steps. Why is he retracing his steps? He was in the right place. He thinks to himself, I must have missed it. I have to go back now and check, because apparently Hashem did show it to me, but I didn't realize it. Hashem said, Ela aretz asher areka. And Avram is looking for it, and Hashem had given him this signal, and he missed it. So vayelech lemasa'av, mi Negev, from the Negev, v'ad Beit El. He went back to that place in Beit El, that same Har Baal Chatzor, and it's there that he stops. Ela makom asher hayasham aholo batchila bein Beit El uvein ha'ay, the same exact place between Beit El and the Ay. El makom amizbeach asher asasham abarishona, right? And there, Vayikra Sham Avram B'Shem Hashem. That's where Avram stops. He says, that must have been the place. I didn't realize it. What does that tell us? It tells us that Hashem had shown something to Avram, right? But Avram needed to interpret it. But as a young, budding Navi, I mean, we think, you know, Naviim are fully formed when they're born. That's not true. There's no reason to believe that. So Avram, as a young Navi, misses the sign. In which case, what Hashem wanted him to do was not to reach the promised land. What he wanted him to do was to find it. Those are two different things. You have to learn how to read my signals. The message that Hashem says is not a crystal clear message. It's one that the Navi needs to interpret. Now, here's the really interesting thing, right? It turns out that is the place. When he goes back to Beit El, it turns out it is the place. And in the continuation, once Lot leaves him, that's where you have the whole story with Avram and Lot. Once Lot leaves him, what does Hashem tell him? V'Hashem amar el Avram acharei hi pared Lot me'imo, sana inecha re'im in ha'makom asher ata sham, tzafona v'negba v'kedma v'gamah. Now look around. North, south, east, west. Look around. Et kol ha'aretz asher ata ro'eh l'cha etenena u'lezaracha ad olam. Kum hitalech ba'aretz yorka u'lerachba ki l'cha etenena. This is your land. Go walk the length and breadth. And by the way, walking the length and breadth of the land in the ancient world was a way of showing ownership. You walk your boundaries and you establish your ownership over that land. So it turns out that Hashem did want him to go to Beit El. And when he got there and he looked around, he should have realized, but he didn't. And he had to learn how to read Hashem's signals. Now, here's the amazing thing, right? So this took Avram, I don't know, a few months, maybe a few years, till he learned how to read that signal. At the end of, not the end, but later on in Avram's life, there's another Lech Lecha. And that other Lech Lecha is also ambiguous. Hashem doesn't tell him. What is it? Where's the other Lech Lecha? Akedat Yitzchak. So Akedat Yitzchak is Perek of Beit, and I don't think I have this here. Do I have this here? No. But we'll get to Akedat Yitzchak in a little bit more in depth in a second.
Yeah,
it's on the other side. Okay? There's another aspect of Akedat Yitzchak that I wanted to, that I wanted to explore, and we'll do them both right now. Okay, at the top of the second site, Vayi acharat vim ha'ele ve'elohim nisat Avraham, v'yom elav Avraham v'yom rineni, v'yom erkachdat bincha et yichidicha asher ahavdet Yitzchak, v'lech lecha al eretz ha'moriah. And what's he, right? El eretz ha'moriah, v'ha'aleu sham le'ola al achad heharim asher omari lecha. On one of the mountains that I'm going to show you, or that I'm going to tell you. Hashem never tells him. It's just like the first Lech Lecha, with one major difference. This time he figures it out right away. Bayom HaShelishi, Vayisa Avraham et Einav, Vayar et Hamakom Merachok. What he saw? The Midrash tells us what he saw. And the Midrash is really interesting, because Midrash says he saw a cloud hovering over a mountain. Now, I see clouds over mountains all the time. And the Midrash has a beautiful description of this. Avram saw the cloud over the mountain. He turns to the two guys who were with him and says, what do you see? And they said, nothing. Avram says, okay, you guys stay here. That's the place, because I see something. Avram understood the cloud over the mountain was a sign of the presence of the Shekhinah or something along those lines, right? The Midrash is trying to say something. Midrash says that Avram learned to see what others couldn't see. And by the way, if you take a look at the entire Avram story, this whole business of seeing and not seeing, there are plays on words on this all throughout. Hagar thinks she can see. Right? She calls the place Be'er Lachai Ro'i. Right? But Hagar is completely blind. She doesn't even see when there's a well of water in front of her face. Avram is the one who can see. Hagar can't. Right? Avram learns to see. So here we have a Navi. And as a Navi, his job is not just to repeat the message he gets from Hashem, but to understand. He has to learn to read the signals that Hashem gives in the world, which, by the way, gives us a little bit of an insight into Nevuah. We just heard Rav Carmel talking about in the four things that happened on the same day, right? And one of them is an earthquake. So most people experience an earthquake and they say, where do I run? And the Navi experiences an earthquake and says, what's Hashem trying to say? He looks around, he understands, he experiences, and he interprets. I'm fond of saying that, there's a Navi and a historian are almost identical, with one difference. The historian looks at what happened in the past and understands how the different events in the past were connected to each other. That's what historians study. How one event from history led to the following things happening and what the patterns of history are. And he can look back, right, with the benefit of 100 or 300 or 500 years of hindsight and look back and interpret those events. The Navi does exactly the same thing, just he does it in real time. He does it in the present. The Navi doesn't see the future. The Navi understands the present. The historian understands the past. The Navi understands the significance of the events in the present. Avram learns to become a Navi. And when he first came to Beit El, he had no clue. Later on, he realized it looking back in retrospect. Some years later, we don't know exactly how many years later, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, depending on whether you want to read like the Midrash or like the Ramban or like the Ibn Ezra, right? But at some point later on, Bayom HaShlishi, he looks up and he sees the place. Avram has learned to read and interpret the signals that Hashem is giving. So Nevuah is not something that is so crystal clear. Now, in the story of the Akedah, it turns out that this Nevuah is really not so crystal clear. What does Hashem tell him? We all think, right, that Hashem tells him to go and take Yitzchak and to sacrifice him. Right? But here's a really interesting thing, because the Rishonim offer a lot of different possible interpretations of what Hashem's message might have meant. I think to an extent, some of them were bothered by the notion that Hashem would have told him to kill his son, when Hashem doesn't believe in that. That's, Avodat HaMolech. If you take a look right underneath that source, on the number five. So there are two different parashanim over here. They say similar things, but dramatically different kinds of conclusions. The Ralbag and Rav Yosef Bechor Shor. Yosef Bechor Shor was one of the great parshanei hapshat in Provence in the Middle Ages. So let's just take a look briefly at what Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says over here. He, by the way, is one of the Balei HaTosfot also. People don't often know him. He's not published in the Mikraot Gedolot, so he doesn't get a lot of attention. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says as follows: Satam HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Dvarav. God said something that wasn't so clear. Kadosh Baruch Hu said Ha'aleyu Sham La'ola, but he didn't clarify exactly what that meant. Satam et Dvarav. His words were closed. V'chashav Avraham. Avraham interpreted what Hashem said. Kitziva alav l'shachto l'haktiro kalil. Avraham thought that he was supposed to bring a korban ola. And you know from Sefer Vayikra that a korban ola is a sacrifice that is burnt completely on the Mizbeach. Ulafichach, and that's why, holich imo eish ve'etzim u'ma'achelet. That's why Avraham brought all the things, all the stuff you need in order to do a korban. So he's got the knife, and he's got the fire, and he's got the wood. It says, Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, v'hu lo tziva rak l'ha'alotu al gabei ha'mizbeach. He only said, ha'alehu, bring him up. He never... I'm just reading Rav Yosef Bechor Shor. Okay? V'hu lo tziva rak l'ha'aloto al gabei ha'mizbeach. He only told him to go and to bring him up to the mizbeach. U'misha he'aleu gamar v'asa mitzvato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says that Avraham misunderstood the instruction. There are other Rishonim who say similar things like v'ha'aleu sham la'ola. Bring him up there. When you go to do the Ola, you have to teach him how to do the Ola. Wild. Ralbag also says that Hashem spoke in a way that could be interpreted in multiple different ways. Ralbag writes as follows: V'ne kivein Hashem yit'ale bazeh ha'ma'amar she'ya'alehu sham ba'avur Ola. Ritzoni lomar, sheyirei Yitzchak sham hakravat ha'olah l'Hashem. He said, bring him up there to teach him how to do the olah, show him. Kidei sheyitchanech ba'avodat Hashem yitalev yagia l'shleimut. Yitzchak has to learn how to do an olah in order to be a good Eved Hashem. Ba'ofen sheyeut, in a way that's appropriate, sheyemi menu hazera hanivchar sheyad Hashem sheyeit Hashem yitalev Avraham. But because, because when you hear it the first time, right, without thinking about it, but you just hear it quickly and you respond immediately, because when it sounds like it is Sheya'ale Yitzchak beno sham la'ola sheyizbechenu v'yisrafenu, right, that was Avram's interpretation of what Hashem said. It's not what Hashem meant at all. Hinei nishlam Hashem yitale nisayon Avraham. So that he goes on to explain the whole issue of the test. Ralbag says Hashem never intended for that. Avram misunderstood. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor says Avram didn't misunderstand. Hashem did it intentionally in a way that was vague. And what that means is that Avram interpreted it a certain way, and at some point Hashem says, you made a mistake. That's not what I meant at all. Yeah?
No, because that's what... But why is he vague? I mean, he's taking a big chance that way. My favorite, my least favorite, is when he says, you'll have a son, but he doesn't say Misara. Four little letters. He could have said Misara. He wouldn't have...
Yes. Yes, and on the other side of the page... On the other side of the page, we have the sources to talk exactly about that. The point over here is that Avraham, as a Navi, needs to learn how to understand Hashem's message.
Maybe Hashem has to be clearer.
Or maybe the goal over here in training, right? If the job of the Navi is to bring the word, the Dvar Hashem, to the rest of the world, then the Navi has to learn how to understand what's a real Dvar Hashem and what am I just imagining, and to be able to distinguish between those things. The primary job of the Navi is to be an interpreter. Now, what's your name?
Abraham.
Okay. You take this very personally. I understand. So Abraham mentions over here that, you know, it would have been nice if Hashem told him, you know, something about his kids also. And it turns out, when it comes to Avraham's children, here's an amazing thing, right? Hashem promises Avraham children, and Abraham over here, this Abraham, is concerned. Why doesn't he say, Mi Sarah? The question goes much, much deeper than that. You're right, and it goes much, much deeper than that, because Hashem then, if you go back to the first side, number three. In Brit Ben Habatarim, Hashem tells him, Yadoa tida ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem. Your children are going to become slaves in a land that doesn't belong to them. So, or foreigners. They're going to be foreigners in a land that doesn't belong to them. Va'avadum, they are going to be enslaved. Ve'inu otam arba meyot shana, and they are going to be oppressed for 400 years, after which they're going to go free, and I'm going to redeem them and bring them back to this land. So there are three components to Brit Ben Habatarim that Avram's descendants have to endure. There's Geirut, being a stranger. There's Avdut, there's being a slave, and there's Inui, oppression. It turns out that when you look at the bottom of the page, number four, we have the story of Yishmael. The story of the birth of Yishmael. And it turns out that Hagar, well, she's a stranger. She's an Egyptian. She's a stranger in Avram's house. In fact, her name, Hagar, is Hager. She is the ultimate stranger. And Avram throws her out of the, or Sarai, sorry. Sarai oppresses her, right? Vata'aneha Sarai. She goes through Inui. And she's a Shifcha. So Hagar, right, endures all three elements, all three components. And in fact, it's right here at the beginning, Sarai Ishet Avram, Amlo Yaldalok, right? So she offers Hagar. And then things go wrong. Pasuk Dalid, Pasuk Hey. Vatomer Sarai El Avram, Chamasi Alecha, Nochi Natati Shifchati Bechaikecha. I gave you my Shifcha. Vatera Kiarita, Kiarta, Vaikal, Baineha, Yishbot Hashem Ben Yuvenecha. So Sarai wants Avram to intervene. Avram says, not my problem. She's a shivcha. Asila hatov be'inayich. Do to her as you please. Vate'aneha Sarai. And Sarai does inui. Whatever inui means, that's not for right now. Vate'aneha Sarai vativrach mipaneha. So Hagar runs away. The malach comes and meets her there. And what does the malach tell her? Shuvi el gavir tech vehit ani tachat yadeha. Go back to your enslavement and endure more inui. Hagar, Hager, Shifcha, inui. Right? Double inui. What does Hagar walk away from there thinking? She has just endured Geirut, Avdut, and inui. What does she walk away thinking? Her children are the children of the covenant. She walks away believing that her child is the child of the covenant. In fact, what's that child's name going to be? Yishmael. God has heard. What a great name for the child of the covenant. It's much better than Yitzchak, which means big joke. Right? She comes back and she tells Avraham the story of what happened to her. And Avraham names the child Yishmael. And Avraham believes that Yishmael is the child of the covenant. Do you know how hard Hashem works in order to convince Avraham that Yishmael is not the child of the covenant? Do you know how many times Hashem has to tell Avraham, and Avraham doesn't believe him the first time, and doesn't believe him the second time. It's not until he gets to Perek Kaf Aleph, when Avraham is instructed to chase this child out of the house, that the message actually sinks into Avraham that this is not the child of the covenant. Hashem comes and tells him, you're going to have a child from Sarai, or from Sarah at that point. And Avram says, it's okay, I don't need it. Yishmael yechel lefanecha. Yishmael is my covenantal child. And Hashem says, no. Right? What does that mean? It means that you have somebody over here, Avraham, who's the first of the Nevi'im that we can count as the line of Nevi'im. We're talking about, you know, within our tradition. And Avraham has to learn what Nevu'ah is, and he learns the hard way. Comes to finding the place, he has to learn the hard way. As comes to figuring out which son is going to be the one, he has to learn the hard way. It comes to Akedat Yitzchak. He's got to learn the hard way. And the point is not that Avram should be listening to God and doing exactly as God instructs him, but Avram has to be listening and interpreting. He has to know what it means. And it's not until Avram finally gets that, after Akedat Yitzchak, that his training as a Navi is complete. That's why Hashem doesn't speak to him anymore afterwards. I mean, it's a little ironic, right? Now, Avram is not the only one. I want to take a look at one more example over here from Sefer Breishit. And there are lots of examples. If we have time, we'll take a look at one more after this, but we'll see. The next person who's identified as somebody who gets direct messages from God after Avraham is? Yeah, Yitzchak. But he's not the next one. There's somebody before Yitzchak. Rivka. Hi. So the Malach comes and tells Hagar something for herself. Okay? Rivka. All right? Rivka's pregnant, and her pregnancy is not going well. There's something odd, right? Even she knows, even though she's never been pregnant before, there's something highly unusual about her pregnancy. Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. In her case, it's actually extraordinary because I think she's probably the first one who turns to God with a request. She invites Nevuah. In all other cases, we have people who are the recipients of Nevuah. Hashem decides when they get Nevuah. But Rivka invites it. Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. Where she went, I have no clue. But she clearly went someplace. It was in the wrong country. That's why Yitzchak, by the way, in the Midrash, Yitzchak never goes to the Beit Midrash of Shem Ve'Ever. Right, in the Midrash. You never find Yitzchak because the Beit Midrash of Shem Ve'Ever was not there. It was up near Haran. And they're right here. So Vatelech, maybe Rivka did go. Maybe she went on a long trip. Right? Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. Right. She goes to ask God. Where she goes, we have no clue. But she asks God and he answers. That's the amazing thing. Rivka is the first one who turns to God with a question and initiates the conversation and gets a response. Avram never did that. Where?
No, that.
But that's in response to something that Hashem said to him. Hashem initiated the conversation. That's Avram's response, right? When Avram argues on behalf of Stone, he's responding, right? In all those cases, Avram is responding. Lo yishmael yechel lefanecha, he's responding, right? No, but Rivka, right, Rivka initiates a conversation. Now listen to what Hashem says, because we all know this, and it's really important, right? And you have this on your page on the second side, number 6. Vayidrotasu abanim bekirba, pasuk kaf beit. Vatomer imkein lamaza anochi vatelech lidroshet Hashem vayomer Hashem lach. Right, and here's a beautiful poem. Shnei goyim bevitnech ushnei luuyim imimayach yiparedu ulaom yilaom yeamatz v'rav yeavod sa'ir. Okay, this is the nevuah that Rivka gets that changes the rest of the course of all of Jewish history. There are two nations in your belly. One will be stronger than the other. V'rav yeavod sa'ir, which means... Okay, so v'rav ya'avod sa'ir, Rivka, it's clear how Rivka understood that. Right? How did Rivka understand that? Right? That the elder one will serve the younger one. Okay? That's clearly the way Rivka understood it. But guess what? The Radak points out, and it's right here on your page, V'rav ya'avod sa'ir, lo zachar imahem ilat et. The word et is missing. It doesn't say v'rav ya'avod et sa'ir. It just says v'rav ya'avod sa'ir. Et is the direct, right? It directs the action. Okay? Milat et, shehi mora al ha'pa'ul. Right? The word et directs the action. V'ine ha'davar mesupak. It says it's unclear from the text. It's not clear who's going to serve whom. Harav et hatzair or hatzair et harav. Whoa.
Why? Just because the et is not there?
It doesn't say v'rav yavod et sa'ir. It could be read as, for example, v'rav, comma, the elder, yavod sa'ir. The younger will serve. Okay? And there are other psukim in Tanakh. There are other psukim in Tanakh where you have similar things. V'rav, the elder, ya'avod sa'ir, right? The younger will serve. Okay? The Chizkuni quotes from Rav Huna, which is an amazing statement. Amar Rav Huna, zacha Yaakov, if Yaakov is zoche, meaning if he deserves it, rav ya'avod sa'ir. V'im lav, but if not, Rav ye'aved min hatzair. So it's not just the Radak, it's in the Gemara. The Gemara suggests that this pasuk is ambiguous. Rav ye'aved sa'ir could be understood two different ways. And then he quotes another interpretation, davar acher, harbe ye'aved sa'ir. Rav doesn't mean the elder. Rav means a lot. That the younger is going to have to work a lot. Now, I have to address this for just a minute, because when you take a look in the rest of Tanakh, the elder, when you have two siblings, you have an elder and a younger, the elder is never, ever called the Rav. You go a little bit further on, and you get into Lavan's house, and Lavan has two children, two daughters. There's a Tzi'ira and a Bechira. Right? The contrast to Tzair is always the Bechor. Look through all of Tanakh. You will never find the word Rav being used to describe the elder sibling. In which case, Rav Ya'avot Tzair, ambiguous at best, because you have to work really hard in order to interpret that as the elder will serve the younger, because it goes against the meaning of Rav in all of Tanakh. In which case, what does this mean? Guess what? In Chizkuni's Davar Acher, V'rav ya'avod sa'ir, right? Chizkuni first suggests it's ambiguous. Then he suggests, you know what? It means something else. It means that the younger one's going to have to work really hard. Which, by the way, is the story of all of Sefer Bereishit. The story of Sefer Bereishit is one in which the chosen child has to go through a very difficult path, right? The the non-chosen one in the family actually achieves success much more quickly. And if you don't believe me, there's a great section in the end of Sefer Yoshua. It was copied from the Haggadah. It's an extraordinary piece. Be'ever hanahar yashvu avotechem me'olam terach avi Avraham va'avi Nachor va'yavdu elohim echirim. Right? Sound familiar? Va'yakachat avichem et Avraham me'ever hanahar v'olichato b'chol eretz Kanan. Avraham had to go all over eretz Kanan v'arbed zaro v'atenu et Yitzchak. He had a lot of other kids, but I also gave him Yitzchak. Va'atenu Yitzchak et Yaakov et Esav. Va'atenu la'Esav et har se'ir l'reshet oto. Esav gets Har Seir. V'Yaakov v'anav yerdu Mitzrayim. Esav becomes a nation immediately. By the time Yaakov comes back from 22 years away from home in Lavan's house and that whole trek, Yaakov has a family. Esav has a nation. Esav has already settled into Har Seir. He not only has one nation, he has two nations that he has merged into one. Esav and Seir and Edom, and he's merged the two of them. It's a difficult piece at the end of Parshat Vayishlach. It's a very, very strange. But he has merged two nations into one. Esav is a nation already. Yaakov goes to serve. V'rav ya'avod Seir is another way of saying the Brit Bin Habitarim. Yadoa teida ki ger yezaracha be'eres lo lahem va'avadum v'inu otam arba miyot shana. It's going to be a long time. You're going to get what I promised you, but it's going to take a long time. A lot of hard work. And that's what Yaakov goes through. He goes through a lot of hard work. Okay? And that's the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Look at this. Just imagine how the story of Tanakh and how the history of the Jewish people would have looked differently if Rivka would have had access to a good Beis Medrash. Right? She could have learned the Radak. She could have learned the Chizkuni.
But they're only in retrospect.
Oh no, I'm not sure about that, because they're actually writing that the Nevoah is ambiguous. That their whole point is the words are ambiguous. We're the ones who are guilty of reading that in retrospect. Because, you know, we're descendants of Yaakov, and, you know, the Brit came through us. So obviously, we look back in retrospect and say, that is exactly what Hashem meant. But it's not clear at all that that's what Hashem meant in the first place. And it was Rivka's interpretation of that that then caused her to prefer Yaakov over Esav, and then caused her to send Yaakov to get the brachot illegally from his father and to rip off his brother and to lie to his father, and ended up, that's what caused him to leave home, right? Meaning the whole story. The whole story is because of the way Rivka interpreted this nevuah. Turns out that Nevuah is not so crystal clear. In fact, I can say that Nevuah is probably less than crystal clear, and it's exactly the opposite. Nevuah is murky. It's the Navi who has to make the Nevuah clear. That's the job of the Navi. The Navi's primary job is not to be a receptacle. The Navi's primary job is to be able to take the murky and to make it clear. In some cases, the Navi does a good job. In Rivka's case, maybe not. I don't know. Okay, yeah.
I think that Rivka actually did interpret it correctly. She knew that it was going to be difficult. If you're going to take the Bechorah from his brother, he knew that the brother was not going to be happy. She also was able to see that Yaakov was the better person, where Yitzchak really wasn't noticing all the things that Esav was doing. And she knew that in taking it, she was going to have to send him away, which was going to be a difficult life for him.
So that's very, very creative and very interesting, and certainly is a possibility that Rivka foresaw all the things that were going to happen, and she realized that this was going to end up in Esav wanting to kill Yaakov. And okay. It's certainly a possibility. I don't see that necessarily as as emerging organically from within the Chumash. By the way,
he wouldn't have to run away.
By the way, there's an assumption that we often make because we're raised on Rashi and Rabbi Scroll. Now you know that Rabbi Arthur Scroll is, right? There's, you know, the authority of a voice. But the image, I was raised on this, you know, starting from, you know, when I was a little child, is that Esav is bad and Yaakov is good. That doesn't emerge until much, much, much later on. When they're children, they're indistinguishable. When they're young, they're indistinguishable. There is nothing, when you read the text, there is nothing about Esav that says bad until you get to the end of Parashat Vayishlach. And even when he says, I'm going to kill you, I venture to guess that anybody who's ever had a sibling has said that at some point. A younger sibling, an older sibling, we've all said, I'm going to kill you.
Letzut
Sayyid, there's nothing wrong with that. He's going out and earning a good living. Right? Providing for his father. His father loves that. Right? Rashi is the one who says, who turns Letzut Sayyid into something negative. But Letzut Sayyid isn't inherently bad or good. Or so? So that's a big misconception. Why do we think that Bechorah means bracha? Just because we're dyslexic? Right? The same letters that we confuse? Bechorah and bracha are two completely different things. Now, bracha, we know what it is. Bechorah, we have no clue. We can venture guesses as to what Bechorah is. But we really have no clue. The one thing you can say about Esav, by the way, Vayivez Esav et HaBechorah, the one thing you can say about Esav, and here's one of the real distinctions between Esav and Yaakov, which does feed back into the whole Brit Bin HaBetarim and this whole theme, but one that Rivka didn't know, and neither did Yitzchak, was that Yaakov. Right? Bechorah is something you get only when your parent dies. Chances are what Bechorah really meant was in the ancient world, like it is today in Saudi Arabia and other places in the Arab world, Bechorah is the law of primogeniture, that the elder gets everything. The elder becomes the leader of the clan. That's the Bechorah. The elder's in charge of everything. And what Esav says is, I'm a hunter. And this, by the way, is the Rashbam. It's the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra. He says, I'm a hunter. You know, my job is dangerous. I risk my life every single day. I'm not going to outlive my father. I live a dangerous life. I'm going to die. I live for today. You're talking about Bechorah? Come on. It's ridiculous. I climb mountains with my bare hands. I climb the sheer cliff of Yosemite, right? With my bare hands. I'm not gonna live long enough to inherit anything. But even it's meaningless. Yaakov thinks into the future. Esav lives for today. Esav buys penny stocks, and you know he's a short-term trader. And Yaakov, you know, looks for blue chips, and he's investing for the long. Is one of them inherently bad or inherently good? Well, in retrospect, we can say lots of things. But those were the natures. Okay, I'm looking at my... Okay, do we have... Okay. Okay. There are loads of other examples. In Sefer Brishit is at least one unbelievable example of this. The Gemara talks about this as well. The Gemara has in Masechet Brachot has an amazing story in the context of talking about dreams. There's so much to say about this. In the context of talking about dreams, the Gemara says that Chalom is 1/60th of Nevuah. And then there's a whole story about one of the Amoraim who has a set of dreams that somebody interprets, and they all come true and they're bad. And his life gets miserable. And then he goes to a different interpreter who gives him different dreams and things turn around. And the Gemara says, Hakol holech acharav pitaron. It's all self-fulfilling prophecy. And if that's true for dreams, then it's true for nevuah too. It's the job of the Navi to take the murky and to make it clear. Nevuah is not absolute clarity, but the Navi has to find the clarity in a world that's very confusing.